Good afternoon, everybody. You may have just heard the message that this conference is going to be recorded. So just to give you a heads up, we are recording this conference today so we can have it on the website for future use. Thank you so much for joining us today. I think this will be an excellent webinar. This webinar's title is Tips for Successful Volunteer Recruitment. As our country experiences dramatic fiscal and demographic changes, volunteer recruitment and retention may become more challenging to both local and state ombudsman programs. Due to individual economic situations, volunteers may have less time to commit to volunteering or cannot afford to travel to their assigned facilities as often. Today's presenters will share a variety of recruitment techniques that work for their programs. In order to address different long-term care ombudsman program structures across the country, we will benefit from four different presenters. I'll give you a brief introduction to our presenters today and then review some logistics for this webinar. Today with us, we have Kathy Gately, State Long-Term Care Ombudsman from Arkansas. She's been the Ombudsman in Arkansas since 2003. When she started with the program, they had 9 full-time paid regional ombudsmen and 3 certified volunteers. During the past 7 years, through a statewide campaign, Kathy, along with her regional ombudsman, has successfully grown their statewide program to over 500 ombudsmen. We have Darlene Cray, the volunteer program coordinator with New Hampshire, and she's been with the state of New Hampshire for 7 years as a regional ombudsman as well as the volunteer coordinator, a certified EDEN associate and EDEN educator, as well as a co-convener for the newly formed New Hampshire Culture Change Coalition. We also have Juanita Beal. She's the volunteer coordinator for King County in Washington State. And Diane Bishop, she's a certified volunteer ombudsman in Oregon. She's been a volunteer with the Oregon program since 2006. And in 2009, she began as a recruitment and screening committee volunteer as part of a 5-person team who work in their local communities to promote awareness, interview prospective volunteers, and provide recognition to existing volunteers. So those are our speakers we will have today. We are going to listen to their presentations today and then open the call at the very end for questions. And you can submit questions. You'll notice that there is a chat function on our webinar. You can submit questions through that, and we'll make sure to ask those of our presenters whenever the time comes at the end of the call to ask questions. We will also cover some resources. We've received 13 different attachments from our speakers today that we'd like to share with you, and I'll give you information about how we will share those on our website in the near future. So, thank you very much for joining us today. And if we could go ahead and move to our first presenter, will be Darlene Cray with New Hampshire. So, Darlene, just as a reminder to our speakers to unmute your line if you'll hit *7, and I'll scroll over to your slide.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Darlene Cray, and I'm from the state of New Hampshire. Just to give you a little background on our state program, we are a single statewide program. We function within state government as being administratively attached to elderly and adult services. We have over 14,500 elders that live in long-term care facilities that are served by 1 state long-term care ombudsman, 4 regional long-term care ombudsmen, of which I, being the volunteer coordinator, am one of the 4. And currently we have 35 certified ombudsman volunteer representatives. 5 are in the process of certification, and we have another 8 that are going to be going through a class in January. Next slide. We found that one of our best recruitment tools within the state is Volunteer New Hampshire, which is equivalent to what other states may know as Volunteer Match. I found the best way to use this tool, because it wasn't very effective at first, was to log into the site and pretend that I was a person looking for a volunteer opportunity before I changed our postings. I made a list of what the best keywords to use if I were searching for an opportunity like ours. And I realized that it was best to create several opportunities, both long-term and short-term, that were more specific as opposed to just one specific
I didn't
want to
disconnect.
I also noticed that it was important for me to watch the stats, and that was helpful in letting me know whether the listing was effective or not. Next slide. This is an example of watching the statistics. And as you can see, looking at the different months, this is just a nine-month snapshot. The posting as it was newer had a lot more hits than more recent. So it was it's important for us to watch that and make sure that we are updating the posting. We also noticed if we went through year by year, we have more hits in the springtime. So I find myself putting in more specific short-term postings in the springtime than in the fall. Next slide. They also have a tool in this website so that you can look at your actual listing. And you'll see that we have four current listings that are there. You'll see that advocacy, elders, long-term care, residential, and nursing home, those were the keywords that I made sure were in the topics for the volunteer opportunity. You'll also see that on the number of hits, there are some of the postings that get hit more frequently than others. And I did a little bit of research there, and I want to share them with you on the next slide.
Thank you.
In looking at that, when I looked at the ones that had advocate or advocacy in the title, that tended to be the one that would get more hits or more views. And I realized that the A really did make a difference because it's first in the alphabet, so anything that has an A in the beginning of the posting is going to pop up before any others. It also reached out to the volunteer as opposed to the elder that needed help, which helped me realize that it gave the volunteer a sense of purpose. Just in case they were looking for a volunteer opportunity to fulfill something within their own life. The residence listing, or the ones that had residence as a keyword, it wasn't as effective as the others, realizing that R shows up later in the alphabetical listing. And it also shows a resident needing help as opposed to the volunteer looking for an opportunity. Next slide. We also use brochures, and I try not to reinvent the wheel too much. I try to use something that's already in place that's effective that can just be changed a little bit. So I looked at our volunteer brochures that also provide basic information about our office. And it provides information about who we are and what we do. The brochure is all-in-one. It's directed towards elders and facilities, staff, families, friends, and potential volunteers. And right in the brochure, there's a tear-off response card so they can just fill it out and pop it in the mail. We get about four responses a month from these, which isn't a lot. But we have a really, really hard time recruiting here in New Hampshire. Next slide. We find that word of mouth is our best recruiting tool for volunteers, but it's also our greatest nemesis because if people are really happy with us, they're going to be sharing that information about how wonderful we are. But when we don't follow through, then the bad word gets around, and we have a hard time recruiting. So we try to look at everything what we do in 360 degrees to make sure that we're responding to the volunteer needs. Next slide. We use education of our volunteers not only as part of the certification process, but we find that offering education as part of the volunteer opportunity is in itself a recruitment tool. We do a lot of pre-education for screening, and that is really letting the volunteer know what they're getting themselves into. It also helps in weeding people out that don't realize what they're getting into, and, you know, us wasting a lot of time on a volunteer that isn't going to work out. We give them 30 hours of classroom time, a minimum of 10 hours with a mentor. We also have them complete specific competencies before they're certified, and then we provide ongoing education via statewide meetings and conferences. Next slide. We found that some of our volunteers were really getting caught up in what they were able to do and not able to do. And as I was saying in the nemesis section, some of our volunteers would get frustrated that they were getting involved in things that we asked them not to. So we created some tools to help them as well, and this is one that I just wanted to share with you. We took the 139 NORS codes, and we broke them out into something that looks like a traffic light. So green, they have all the tools at the end of their certification to follow through on those situations. In the yellow category, we ask them to pause and make a call to the regional in charge of their facility so that they can have the conversation to determine whether or not it's something they can respond to or whether it falls into the red category, which is regional ombudsman or staff members only. Next slide. As far as retention, which, again, we spend so much time in the beginning with our volunteers, it's important to retain them. So we noticed that layers of support were important to that volunteer. So they have the volunteer coordinator, and I provide the screening, the education, the initial support throughout their certification. I'm also their point of contact for any administrative support, which is the process of being a volunteer, their mileage, visitation reports, and all the documentation that goes along with that, their assignments, and then other volunteer opportunities that we've put in place. We have a mentor that is assigned to them that works hand-in-hand with them in the facility to provide support through the certification as well as providing an ongoing relationship so that they can call that mentor and ask them even 6 or 9 months down the road, you know, can you come back to the facility with me? And then there's the regional long-term care ombudsman that is the person that routinely goes into that facility that they're assigned to, and they provide the more direct supervision and direction, ongoing communication, and also other situations that may be happening in their facility. Next slide. We noticed that as the years have changed and volunteers have changed, we needed to provide more than one layer of volunteer involvement. We have our traditional volunteers that visit facilities on a weekly basis, but then we had other people that wanted to volunteer that didn't fall in that traditional model. We allowed opportunities for volunteers to visit once a month, come into the office and be office volunteers. We have a statewide resident council that meets via conference call, so we have volunteers that support their efforts. We have mentors. We have education volunteers that go out into facilities and provide specific train-the-trainer education modules. We have our snowbirds that up here in New Hampshire, people leave in the cold weather and go to Florida, so we allow them the opportunity to take a 4-month leave of absence to be able to go to Florida, and then they pick up where they left off. We have a co-facility volunteer, which goes hand-in-hand with that snowbird. Sometimes we have people that are willing to work together with another volunteer to make sure that that facility is covered year-round. And then new to come, we're looking at investigation-certified volunteers, which would be able to respond to any of the situations that fell within the yellow or the red category of that NORS guide. Next slide. Recognition was also really important to our volunteers. What we did was we put together an annual recognition event in the spring to recognize the person. We made sure that they got birthday cards and get well cards. We offer scholarships for training and education. We also look at other recognition programs within our state, and we nominate those volunteers for those separate awards, such as a Spirit of New Hampshire Award. There's a Governor's Award for Volunteerism. And then we also created a statewide Elder Advocacy Award. And all of our volunteers have won each of these awards at different times. But most importantly, being there for the volunteer when they call, being supportive, and responding to their needs as well. Next slide. So within the recognition area, we found that we were wanting to do these different things, but we didn't have the funds to do it. So there were a group of people, myself included, that got together and formed a 501c3, which is called the Friends of New Hampshire OLITCO. And the purpose of that 501c3 is to support the efforts in volunteer recognition and education for the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman. We do an annual fundraiser every year, and I threw in a picture there. Our annual fundraiser is a mini golf tournament, and the participants that create the teams for the mini golf tournament are nursing home and assisted living or board and care home residents. They come together to compete against each other. We have opportunities for them to talk about different rights that they're entitled to and the benefits of being able to get out into the community and give back to their community. The 501c3 also serves as a fiscal agent for educational programs. We recently had a statewide conference that we offered scholarships for all of our volunteers, as well as the nursing home surveyors, the Adult Protective Service people, our office, all to attend, and it had a more of a person-centered, person-directed spin on it. It was a really wonderful event, but we could only do that with the 501c3. This also gives an opportunity for people to give back, and their donations are tax-deductible. And that's it, Amity.
Thank you so much, Darlene. I appreciate that. And we had some questions come in for you that we will address at the end of after all the presentations. So next we have Kathy Gately. And Kathy, if you will hit *7 on your phone to unmute your line, and I'll pull up your slides. And please remind me when I need to switch your slide for you. Thank you very much, Kathy.
Will do, Amity. Can you hear me okay?
I sure can.
Okay. This is Kathy Gately, the State of Arkansas Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and my presentation is basically going to be from the perspective of the Office of the State Long-Term Care Ombudsman, and the first slide basically states building a certified long-term care ombudsman program. Because here in Arkansas, of course, while there was a little snippet of a program, we had three certified volunteer ombudsmen in 2003 when I took office. But we really were starting from ground zero in constructing the program. And so to begin with, you know, when you're setting the structure of, or laying the foundation for any program, you know, it's important to get that strong foundation going from the beginning. And to begin with that, policies and procedures are very, very important. And when you are developing your policies and procedures, it is essential that you bring to the table all of the stakeholders. What we did here in Arkansas was that we brought all of the representatives of the Area Agency on Aging, the executive directors. We brought together the executive director of AARP, the director of the Arkansas Healthcare Association, the president of the Arkansas Advocates for Nursing Home Residents. And we sat down, we went through the Older Americans Act with them, and then developed the policies and procedures with their input. Now, I always tell folks that, you know, Older American Act states that you need to get or to, you know, try to receive input from the different entities, but, you know, that doesn't necessarily mean that when they provide their input that you have to do, you know, something that they've suggested. But we do want to involve everybody and get everybody at the table so that hopefully it will be a smooth process throughout the program's history. And also by doing that, by having them involved with the policies and procedures, is that later on down the road, if there is a concern, you know, you can always come back and say, well, you know, you were there, you were a part of it, and you agreed to this from the beginning. And it sure does help those barriers later on. Then the next step was to build the curriculum. Part of our curriculum we got from the National Ombudsman Resource Center, pulled some of their tools that they had developed, and then various stakeholders made suggestions, and of course we incorporated some of their ideas into it. The classroom training was developed, and what we felt was the best, because adult learners don't have a lot of time nowadays. And, you know, if you drag it out too long, you're going to, you know, kind of lose their attention. So we do the entire classroom training in one day. It usually is about, if you cut out the breaks and the lunches and everything, it's about a good 6.5-7 hour training straight through. And we do break that up with various videos. We do a lot of role playing. We interact with the new volunteers, and to make the whole experience a fun part of it. And then there is a, well, I don't like the word exam, but there is a written reflection of the day at the end of the day. So they have, at that point, completed the class and received a certificate stating that they have completed the classroom training. Before they leave the classroom training, I do require for my regional ombudsmans and my certified volunteer ombudsman coordinators to, at that point, pull out their schedules and go ahead and schedule with the new volunteer the first 2 hours of the practicum in the facility. Because we've learned that if you let folks leave the classroom training prior to setting that first visit, it is a struggle to connect with them later and to get the schedules going. And then they do the first 2 hours, and then they do 8 hours on their own. But my coordinators during that time are constantly sending them cards, making phone calls, and kind of, you know, being their cheerleader for them during that 8 hours. And then the coordinator sets up with the regional for the last 2 hours. And at that point, the regional ombudsman will email me their recommendation that the volunteer become certified. Now, I make a huge, because it is a huge deal, out of their certification, and I compose an email, a very inspirational email, and send it out on a statewide basis to everyone congratulating the success, welcoming them into our ombudsman family. And then I have some very beautiful certificates that are printed off, and I sign off on those, and those get mailed out to the local area. Several of the regional ombudsmans then take that certificate, frame it, and have been successful in presenting the new volunteer ombudsmans their certificate at their board of directors meeting. And this is all empowering those volunteers as to how essential and how vital and important their role is that they have just successfully taken on. Continuing education at the local level is, I'm sorry, they just told me that my folks here can now hear the webinar. Continuing education is crucial. They are open and welcome to all four of my statewide trainings. And as a matter of fact, I'm out here at the Ferncliff Resort Center with a bunch of them right now because this starts our annual ombudsman, our seventh annual ombudsman retreat, which included in that this Friday we have over 120 registered for our annual ombudsman recognition banquet. So they have their trainings that they're required to go to at the local level, but they are the door is always open, and numerous of the certified volunteer ombudsmen do come and attend the statewide training. Recertification requirements, I personally do a renewal letter from the state office. I keep up with that and sign off on those and give them to the regional ombudsmen who distribute that to them on an annual basis. And there again, that's keeping them with an official document that their certification is still in good standing. Next slide, please. Obtaining team buy-in and bringing the team together. That is a continuous process. And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we included all of the stakeholders. We have expanded on that. A couple of years ago, we did a project where we were connecting the ombudsman family links. And it was a way to get all of the ombudsmen statewide to really, you know, look outside the box and to think about where all they can recruit, where all they had recruited, who were they partnering with, who should they partner with. And by the end of the year, the ombudsman had successfully built a paper chain that completely surrounded the room of the recognition banquet hall because they not only added to, but they thought about who all that they were connecting and working with every day. It is essential to continually to keep people bought in. And so that is a lot of extra work. It takes a lot of energy. But, you know, the payoff is phenomenal. Next slide, please. Selling and promoting the ombudsman concept. That was probably one of the biggest challenges that we've had because not too many folks, including stakeholders, really took the program serious. You know, with the ombudsman program, we don't give out blood or food or clothing. And so a lot of times it's a struggle for individuals to see what is our valuable service that we provide. And so I did a campaign and continue that campaign in educating folks on the true importance of quality of life and that if you do not have quality of life, that, you know, that becomes fatal. You go into geriatric loss of will to thrive. And then the food and the clothing and the blood is no longer necessary because you have no will to live. The ombudsmans are continuously going out there and showing how them going out is directly affecting the quality of life and the quality of care of each individual resident. So we're doing a lot of stories now that we're sharing to show people that our non-tangible service is actually a very tangible service. And, you know, who do we sell all of this to? We sell it to the public. We sell it to, you know, the nursing homes themselves. We sell it within the AAAs, within the Department of Human Services. We have gone, actually, from those three certified volunteer ombudsmans in 2003 to about 547 or 48, I'm losing count now, in just a very short amount of time. And these are very dedicated folks. We have provided over 13,000 hours this year alone. You constantly have to do maintenance and repair, and that's with any program. But with the ombudsman program, it's a continuously weekly, sometimes daily, you know, tool that you have to put into place. because you have, as the slide shows, you know, you have the miscommunication, misunderstanding, misguidance, and misrepresentation. You have to provide that monitoring and the oversight and do it in such a positive way and be that cheerleader. We try to prevent the miscommunication by making sure that we do thorough and good screenings on our volunteers. We're constantly doing the coaching, and we're giving them as much empowerment as we can, and, of course, using diplomacy with them at all times. Next slide, please. We love in Arkansas to celebrate. We try to create reasons to celebrate, and it's not that hard to do because, you know, these folks are so compassionate, and they do just amazing, amazing jobs. From going out, and I had one coordinator who reached out to Dear Abby and wrote an article about the Ombudsman volunteer part of the program. And that was phenomenal, and we celebrated that, and we'll continue to celebrate that.
Okay.
We celebrate anything from Ombudsman grandbabies to Ombuds great-grandbabies, anniversaries. This Friday I will be handing out a host of first, second, third trophies, the nominees for the Outstanding Arkansas Ombudsman of the Years. And then at the quarterly trainings at the local level, those ombudsmans out there are just phenomenal at coming up with different ideas and ways that they can really recognize the value of what these volunteers are doing for us each and every day. And it's not so much what they're doing for the program, but as all of you know, it is definitely what they're doing for our elders and disabled who reside in long-term care facilities. Next slide, please. With a firm foundation, partnership, dedicated workers, promotion, consistency, and continued support, our most valuable and vulnerable citizens will receive such a serious and treasured service, and that is the Certified Volunteer Long-Term Care Ombudsman Program. There is a host of additional tips and strategies, you know, that we have done. The biggest thing is always going to be word of mouth. I have traveled all over this state in the last 8 years. I have traveled 2.5 hours to have nobody show up and turn around and hug my regional and my coordinator and tell them that that was fine, that that was great, that they still did a wonderful job because that was out of their control. I have traveled and I have trained one person in the lobby of a hotel room in the middle of the evening until late at night. And that's what it takes. It takes that level of commitment and leadership in order to truly get the program up and going and to keep it sustained. I thank y'all very much, and I thank you, Amity, so much for inviting me today.
Thank you, Kathy. And we did receive some questions for you as well, but like I said, I'll bring them up at the end of all the presentations.
Thank you.
So next we have Juanita Beal. And Juanita, just as a reminder, please hit *7 to unmute your phone.
Good afternoon, everyone.
Oh, and okay. Just so everyone knows, we do not have a PowerPoint for this, so the slide will not change. Thank you.
Amity, how do I mute my phone back?
*6.
Good afternoon, good afternoon, everyone. I'm reporting today from the Pacific Northwest, and we have had a wild couple months here with 4 trainings. We've trained over 50 people, and we've doubled our recruitment program. And so I am going to tell you how we did that today. I love all the ideas of recruitment and training. And what we do here is we have, I was a staff ombudsman for a while and also a volunteer. And when I came on to staff, I realized, oh, my goodness, we don't have very many volunteers. We have just last month alone, our volunteer base for reporting were 64 volunteers who volunteered almost 1,300 hours in the field. We had 209 active cases, 383 active complaints. and that continually grows. And we had just a very small base. So now we have almost 100 volunteers on. We've had four trainings, one training in August, September, October, and November. And those trainings have had, I would say, a minimum of 12 people in each class. And some of the things that we did is that we, you know, we're all facing cutbacks and layoffs, but one of the things we did is we took a really big risk, and we took our holiday budget for food and snacks and everything, and we bought an ad in the Seattle Times. And one of my, these things will be posted for you. I've sent them into Amity. We did special things with our ads, a couple of things that you might be interested in. We, number one, we selected the areas. We met with our staff, and the staff indicated which areas in the city, in King County, had no representation of volunteers. And we dedicated those ads to specific areas where we wanted to find people. The other thing that we did is we made them area-specific, like the one that you'll see. It says South King County Volunteer Ombudsman's Needed. And then we actually list five or six facilities that don't have volunteer ombudsmans. And
Juanita, could you please speak up, please? I think some people are having a hard time. Thanks.
Sure. The other thing we do in our ads is we reference the article, Seniors for Sale. It was an article that was written in the Seattle Times late last summer. And when we reference that, what we found nobody's really discussed what kind of volunteers you're bringing in. But this ad generated over 100 calls, and out of that 100 calls, probably a third of them qualified and made it through our very stringent background check system. And we have teachers, nurses, social workers, people with really highly educated backgrounds. And those are the people that we wanted to bring in, people who were good online, so those activity reports would get back to us on time and we could do a lot of things by email. Another thing we did is we were really consistent with our volunteer goals. We all set them as a team in our office, and we refined our training to be very specific with volunteer education and the skills necessary to be effective in the field. We really didn't want the volunteer that we were going to have to spend hours and hours and hours with, because we don't have time to do that. And so we created a training that actually is very, it's an intensive 32 hours of training with a lot of role modeling. We go out in the field. We see boarding homes, nursing homes, and adult family homes. We do a lot of activity report form work so they know the difference between complaints and consultations. They know how to fill out that form. They know how to respond to both of those scenarios. We are going to initiate an active mentorship program. We're actually going to be developing that this next year a little bit better than the one that we have. We require our volunteers to attend 9 meetings and activities throughout the year and participate in what we call an outreach. And that is where we select 4 times a year certain areas where they are consumed with adult family homes, and we bring our whole volunteer base there, and in one day we could see maybe 150 homes that would normally not be visited. So that's been extremely not only effective for us to get our eyes and ears out in those adult family homes, but it's also generated complaints, and it's also taught these new recruits about adult family homes, and they go out with a seasoned ombudsman at that time and spend the day in the home. So that's worked really well for us as well. We do offer programs and presentations in our monthly volunteer meetings, and some of those programs might be the LGBTQ community in long-term care settings and how to, that's going to be something in the future that we're going to be addressing to have more information for our staff and volunteers with, and mental illness, the kind of mental illness that the residents may have and how the ombudsman adjusts to it or understands that. The involuntary commitment process, and AARP also did an excellent presentation that we brought the community in for on staying sharp with brain health, and that was also very effective. We also encourage our volunteers, anytime we have a training class, which we try to have a minimum of 4 trainings a year if we have 12 or more volunteers for those trainings, and we allow our volunteers to come into trainings on certain topics that they might feel they want to learn more or have a review on, a refresher with, and we offer those to them as well, and they're welcome to come, and of course it doesn't cost anything. We offer voluntary ombudsmans into specific roles. Like some volunteers can only work in the office. They're being trained to take intake calls and work on ombuds manager. Some of them are going to be care plan specialists, so that when we have a new volunteer who has a care plan coming up and the staff is out in the field, we can assign one of our specialists who is very good and experienced with care plans to go with that volunteer. We're going to do more and more of that, more and more of that as our volunteer base grows. Let's see. We also have, when you get a chance to look at the email that should come your way with our copies, we do a door hanger that is really very effective, and you can interplace different business cards in it if you want to do a presentation or highlight a program that we're offering or even introducing a new volunteer to a facility. If they go door to door, they can just put on that little door hanger, and it has all the information about the ombudsman's and as well as the volunteer's business card. That's been effective. We also have a bookmark that is about 12 inches high, maybe 2 inches wide. And behind, in the front, it says, "We love our ombudsman." And then on the back is a complete list of yearly activities. So it's a one-stop glance or something they can hand somebody and say, "Well, this is what I do. You know, I'm an ombudsman, and the Seattle volunteers meet every Tuesday, and the South King County volunteers meet on Wednesdays, the East Side volunteers meet on Thursdays," and it just gives them a one glance that they can put in their wallet or their purse, and they'll always have that available to them, so they're planning. Let's see. We do a newsletter for our volunteers, and in that newsletter we have a calendar that they can post on their refrigerator, and it lists all the volunteer activities for the month, as well as when their volunteer meetings are, when the outreaches are. And that's about it. So thank you for having me.
Thank you, Juanita. And we received several questions for you as well. Some of them I can address immediately. Y'all asked if you would have copies of this article and the press releases that she mentioned during her presentation, and yes. She sent along 8 different examples of the door hanger, the press release, and the article, and that will be shared on our website after this webinar. And you'll get information and the link whenever that information is posted. Okay? Thank you. All right, let's move to our final presenter, Diane Bishop, and then we'll move into questions. Diane, hit *7 to unmute your line, and just let me know when to switch your slides.
Thank you. Hi, I'm Diane Bishop. I am a volunteer ombudsman, but as well I'm a part of a group of volunteers who help with recruitment and screening committees. Gretchen Jordan, who's our state's coordinator of volunteers, asked me to share this information for her and to answer any questions that you might have about Oregon's recruiting. So, new slide, please. YMMV, your mileage may vary. This must be a Gretchen term. I wasn't familiar with it. We have some specific things that helped us increase our volunteer base. A position was specifically created just for recruitment and outreach, and that's Gretchen. It included working with recruitment and screening committees, outreach, the press, and, of course, the ubiquitous other duties as assigned. Our agency had previously been a very low profile, but community partners were extremely supportive and welcoming. Gretchen took advantage of as many of the offers as she could to adding free email recruitment to AARP members, having a table at events and fairs, talking at any community informational sessions that she could arrange. Overall, from the top down, the message was clear. We need more volunteers. And we had a specific person assigned to respond to those requests and to do the very important follow-up. New slide. A plan was created to help focus efforts. 30 to 40% of her time was invested in travel and outreach to smaller communities or those with the greatest need for volunteers. There wasn't a large amount of resources, but she targeted her expenses for travel and lodging, for small expenses for outreach events, but didn't have a lot of extra brochures or trinkets and things to give away, and I think that's appropriate. Volunteer input and assistance was always welcomed. I'll go over each of these items in greater detail in the following slides. So let's start with the next slide. So we should be on, yeah, there we are. We needed some specific goals, and although they can change moment to moment, it at least helps keep us focused. There weren't any real surprises. Rural areas needed fewer volunteers, but generally were a much harder area to recruit in. Larger areas had more volunteers, but often not as committed. And a long-term commitment was something we really needed to emphasize with the amount of energy we put into each of our volunteers. Over the course of 2 years, we've refined that recruitment message from a commitment of 10 hours a month, which is really not realistic, to one of 5 to 10 hours a week for 1 to 2 years. Needs are reviewed monthly and with specific training dates. For example, if we had a training scheduled for an area in mid-April, we would work in mid-February to start outreach, to do press releases, connect with the community partners, give presentations, etc. Often we did have volunteers come in at the last minute, and it was a juggling act, but we needed to be as flexible as possible. Previously, potential volunteers might have to wait after being interviewed and approved, and then by the time the training was available, nearly all of them had lost interest and moved on to something new. New slide. Gretchen had many contacts from previous employers and connections, and she wasn't afraid of using them. She invited herself to a lot of events, meetings, discussions, and helped raise awareness of the program. She would look at the Travel Oregon website and find large community events that might be a good place to do outreach, especially events that would attract a lot of retired boomers. The Oregon Blue Book is a wealth of information about the community, media contacts, elected officials, community colleges, etc. I believe most states have their own version of this Blue Book, and it's well worth the $30 to have as a reference and resource. And from personal experience, I can tell you that Gretchen would find events in my own community that I wasn't even aware of and suggest that we might want to make ourselves available. So it was really great. She really knew where to look. New slide. Gretchen developed several presentations about the Ombudsman Program and gave them to any group she could, handouts such as the Outcomes piece, which is a handout that you will have available to you through this program. was a great way to tell the story about how we make an impact for our seniors in the area or our residents that we're dealing with. This photo that you see on the slide there was from a reader board at a senior center where Gretchen gave a presentation. And like some of the other speakers today, she had the experience where only one person showed up, but he volunteered. New slide. Staff were also a great resource and could notify Gretchen of communities where there might be sensitive issues so she wouldn't inadvertently put her foot in her mouth or, you know, say the wrong thing about the wrong kind of issue. And several volunteers who had, or people who had been previous volunteers, were also very helpful in those communities to make connections and give introductions. And as you know, in these smaller communities, everyone knows everyone else, so the word gets around. New slide. I can get to my slide. There we go. We never wanted to have our organization and mission exploited because of negative events at facilities. We focused on the positive, the cost-effective, and preemptive message, and about a specific local volunteer. The more specific we could be, the better the chance was of the press release getting good coverage and placement. Several made the front page. Several were in conjunction with other caregiving or stories about elder issues. And I have to say at this point that the article that we had generated just brought in so many volunteers that we have filled up the entire area in Lane County where I'm from, which is just a small part of Oregon, just with one article. It was amazing. So as you can see on this slide, you can just guess how busy Gretchen was in last January when the article went out in Portland, which is our largest and largest community and holds half of our state's population. So she had 200 people she had to deal with by phone, to email, send them the applications, just to talk to them so they understood the program. Paid ads in smaller markets were $50 to $100, and a few times other Gretchen was able to convince other organizations to pay that fee for her. New slide. We've had some success in Craigslist. The verbiage was specific and brief. Now, some volunteers thought Craigslist would bring all sorts of evil people to volunteer, but ultimately, it is our role to do the proper screening, just as we would for any other potential volunteer. Gretchen has found that 95% of our prospective volunteers have access to email, and they welcome electronic communication and information. Making a QR code, and she had to tell me what it was, it's that thing you see on the screen, is free and easy. She has started to put it on all of our printed material. Brochures, posters, and handouts have all been updated to this century. And just I wanted to say that locally, our county enjoys a good response from a listing we have on the United Way website. New slide. You've simply got to get back to folks as soon as they can, as soon as you can, and they deserve accurate information and requirements way up front about the program. If we sent out a volunteer application packet, Gretchen follows up with that person, and especially if there's a training in the area coming up soon. Language and information in all recruitment materials was all updated to reflect a more accurate picture of the volunteer's role. New slide. You've got to be sure your staff is ready for the increase. We've had to streamline and reorganize several times to allow for training and certification of 10 volunteers at a time instead of 2 or 3. And we're always looking at ways we can do a better job. And I can tell you, from a volunteer standpoint, Gretchen's professionalism has made a huge difference in our program in responding to those potential volunteers. New slide. So here's some numbers to help illustrate the point that it will take a while once you have somebody on board who can really put energy into recruiting those volunteers. And I'm assuming that these PowerPoint slides will be available after, so I won't keep you too long at that slide. Let's go to the next. This is the last slide. Here's Gretchen's contact information. She was unable to be here today, and that's why she's asked me to step in. If you have specific questions for me afterward, I'll just give you my telephone as well. I'm at 541-345-2846. And you can also just contact Gretchen. She can get you a hold of me. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Diane. And just to let everybody know, we will send out the speaker's contact information after the call with some additional resources. So thank you very much, Diane. If you will go ahead, all the presenters, if you'll go ahead and unmute your line. I mean, to mute your line. And if we can go into questions, I did receive several questions via the chat feature, so I'm going to review those first because it may already address some of the questions you may have in the audience. A couple questions we had for Kathy. If you could, Kathy, before we launch into these questions, give a three-minute, a very brief statement about your interaction with your universities and how you recruit and train their students and how that's increased your volunteer numbers, that would be excellent.
Okay. Can you hear me okay?
Sure can.
Good. Okay. That was a project that was a vision that I had about 7 years ago, was to be able to reach out to the younger generation through the universities, through the colleges, social work, law colleges, and nursing colleges. I believe it was around 2005, that one regional ombudsman in the Texarkana area was able to recruit a social work class. And we did the training down there, and it was just a beautiful beginning. They did not pursue getting it into the curriculum like later we were successful to do, but it was that initial seed that was planted. And there, you know, my objective is that we really need to get the younger generation professionals while they're students so that we can get more quality recruited in the future and professional staffing in the facilities interested in the care of geriatrics. The next step was in the Region 2 area, which is up in the northeastern part of the state. The Harding University College of Nursing, we were able to present. I went with the regional and the volunteer ombudsman coordinator, and we presented to the dean of that nursing college. And they just fell in love with it. They actually rewrote the curriculum for the class on geriatric nursing and were successful in getting that approved and accredited. And then we began, and I adjusted the training to be able to work with the university. So now instead of doing it in one day, each semester I broke it up into three classes. So I go down to the university and teach three Wednesdays in a row, and then the university also allowed for class time for the students to utilize. In regards to getting their practicum done, and it is required for them to complete certification in order to graduate from that class. The experience has been phenomenal. Harding University takes students from around the nation, and so just a few of them wind up staying here in Arkansas or were Arkansans to begin with. But the beauty of it is that we are able to outreach nationally by exposing these young nursing students to the ombudsman program. The journals the students write, they begin each year, and they're pretty much, you know, the beginning the same for each one of them is that they're kind of afraid of the elderly. They, you know, are real leery about going into a nursing home. They've heard horror stories, et cetera. And, you know, it is so warm and fuzzy-like when come mid-semester, you start reading their journals and their whole mindset is changed. and they have fallen in love with the elderly. And now, you know, where they began their mindset at believing that they would go into surgery or into a doctor's office or into pediatrics, numerous of them have said that they had, by the end of the semester, changed their mind, and now we're going to concentrate on the field of geriatrics. And it really gets them on that holistic track from the beginning, and it's helping to recruit that type of professionals into the long-term care field. In addition to that, within the last year, I have been able to get into the curriculum for all administrators in training for skilled nursing facilities, all administrators in training for assisted livings and residential care, all certified activities directors curriculum, and the social directors or social workers required classroom training. So that has just been a huge plus to be able to expose those upcoming administrators, activities directors, and social workers in holistic care, resident rights, and about the ombudsman philosophy. So we have been just really, really pleased with it. And we're looking at up in the northwestern part of the state and the central part of the state, doing our utmost best to get it into the College of Law.
Thank you very much, Kathy. I appreciate you touching on that. Okay, I'm going to move through a few other questions. Darlene? One question we received was about your mentor program and whether the mentors are actually staff ombudsmen or other experienced volunteers. And unmute at star 7.
Can you hear me, Amity?
Yes.
Okay. Our mentors are other volunteers. We found that volunteers that were receiving that in-facility training from staff members started to go outside the boundaries of a volunteer, and it was really hard to keep them away from things that staff would normally become involved in, like records reviews and more complex and detailed situations that we ask our volunteers not to become involved in. We also found that our volunteers were looking to create that trusting relationship with the elders within the facility so that they would feel comfortable in opening up and bringing concerns forward. And our regional ombudsmen usually go in and respond specifically to the concern raised by the elder and then leave as soon as it's done. So we were finding they were coming from different approaches, and it made more sense for our mentors to be volunteers that were used to doing that type of work.
Great. Thank you. And Diane, we have some questions for you as well.
Okay.
And unmute at star 7. Could you talk more about if there is a difference between certified volunteer ombudsman in your program or volunteer ombudsman? Do they all have to be certified? And could you talk more about your screening process and what you look for whenever you're screening potential volunteers?
Certainly. All of our volunteer ombudsmen must be certified. So they go through a training. I realized I didn't say anything about that in the presentation. They go through a 5-day training, which includes a shadowing with an existing ombudsman, so a practicing certified ombudsman. And then in the past, we've let them out on their own, and it's not easy, and it's a good way to lose volunteers. So we've just been starting locally in our county a mentoring program where we call and check in with the new ombudsmen who've just been trained. We volunteer to go out with them if they'd like. Some of them would prefer to go on their own to their own facility. So it kind of depends on the new volunteer and how much mentoring they need. But we're just starting that. I like that Darlene's been doing this group for quite a few years, and I like the 10 hours with each with a mentor right up first. I think that makes so much sense. As far as screening, it really depends on who is interviewing. But what we've found here locally is that we we call in the applicant for an interview, and we have three interviewers, and we follow a state listed of rule, or excuse me, not rules, but a state list of questions to ask, and we have certain, then we score them afterward. It really seems to help to have three different viewpoints of a person, and it helps to have a practicing ombudsman on that interview panel to sort of help that new applicant understand what the program's really about and what it might entail, and to really ferret out if they understand advocacy. And so because we've had some kind of mistakes in the past where we thought this person really got it until they got into the program and dropped out halfway through the class, we've really been putting a lot of emphasis on their knowledge and understanding of advocacy, so they really know what it is that they're going to be doing. And then after the screening, we call their references as the recruitment and screening committee, and then once we have an idea of what they thought, what we felt, we make a recommendation to the state and let the state make a choice whether or not they want to train this person.
Great. And since we're already on this topic, Diana, I received a question if you would send a list of the questions y'all asked during your screening process.
And absolutely.
I can't remember. Okay, because I didn't think that was in the resources. If you could send that to me and I'll share them with everybody else.
Certainly.
And then a general question for all of our speakers was a really good one. What is a good way for you and your experience to, unfortunately, when you have to, turn down a volunteer that may not be a good fit for your program?
This is Kathy in Arkansas, and the rule of thumb that all of the regional ombudsmans that I have them utilize is to very gently, very diplomatically pull that individual aside and start counseling with them about other volunteer opportunities within the AAA or within the community that might be a better fit. Our screening process starts from the get-go when they do the application and to the interview. And even during the classroom training, we go through so many don'ts that we've had several potentially new volunteer ombudsmen who were screened out just in those three parts of the screening process. So typically, and there again, when they go and they do the practicum and they do that first 2 hours, the regionals and the coordinators are, you know, highly trained to look for those red flags. And when they see those red flags, they know they've got two options, and that is to either, you know, retrain them, provide them some additional training. Their practicum can be extended to see if we can salvage that individual. But if it is definitely, you know, a clear-cut case to where we know that this is not going to be a good fit for them, then we do pull them aside and we start guiding them towards other programs and other places that they can be a positive benefit.
And please, when responding, remember to unmute your phone using *7. Thank you very much, Kathy. Anyone else want to take a stab at that, or can we move to the next question? Okay. Another question we received was that the respondent saw the benefit in layering volunteers, basically having the different types of volunteers, but they were wondering if all those volunteers are certified at the same level or if you actually have different certifications for those.
This is Darlene in New Hampshire. All of our volunteers go through the same certification process. So even if they volunteer in the office, they're still certified. That way, if they do make a quarterly visit to a facility just as a pop-in, then we're able to count them on our NORS report.
Okay. Thanks. That answered two questions, NORS and reporting and certification, so thank you. I'm going to follow up with another question because I've received it from two different people. Let's spend just a little bit of time on it because I believe we're going to have future calls specifically about retention, but if you have any immediate ideas about retention and maintaining interest of your volunteers, and, you know, keeping them engaged, that'd be helpful. So maybe one or two quick tips.
This is Diane. One of the things we have done locally is maintain that connection with especially the new certified ombudsman. We do have monthly meetings, and if we notice that some of our certified ombudsmen have not attended, we send out an email message to them sort of outlining what happened at that particular meeting and providing them with either a hard copy or an electronic copy of the material that they missed if something was handed out, or at least a list of what the material was, and ask if they have preferences for in or if they'd like to receive any of those materials. We've also do a volunteer recognition event locally about twice a year, especially if we aren't able to have our statewide conference. And there we just generally provide food because some of us like to cook on the recruitment and screening committee. And then we bring in a special speaker. For instance, my favorite was when we actually had some money provided that where we could invite a woman, a humorist, who talked about how to keep a good attitude when you're dealing with such difficult and sad situations as many of our residents are dealing with. And she was a great speaker, and it just lifted everybody up. And it was in January when we all need to be lifted up anyway.
Great. Thank you.
I think, can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say one of the things that we really try to do here in Seattle is to respond as quickly as possible to any volunteer's phone call or email and immediately try to assess what their problem is and give them feedback.
Great. I agree with that, Juanita. Thank you. A logistics question about screening for y'all. Do you require criminal background checks, and if so, who pays for that, the local state program or the volunteer maybe?
We absolutely do a very in-depth criminal background check here in Seattle, and it is run through the agency where we're housed here at Solid Ground, and they can get one done in about 8 minutes.
Okay.
In Arkansas, we run it through the state police. And if they have not been a resident in Arkansas in the past 5 years, we do the FBI. And that the cost of that is incorporated in the sub-grant that I send out for the volunteer part of the program.
And this is Diane. In Oregon, it's similar. We go through the state police, I believe. I'd have to ask Gretchen that for sure. But our state office does handle that and does a criminal check on all volunteers once they've been certified. Or right before they've been certified, excuse me.
Great, thank you.
Here in New Hampshire, we do three things. We check them against the state criminal records. We also, if I have any inkling that they may have had a professional license, I check them against the Office of Inspector General exceptions report. And then here in New Hampshire, we also have a state abuse registry. The OIG and the state registry are free, and then New Hampshire gives a reduced rate for people that are getting involved in volunteer programs.
Great, thank you. Okay, another logistics issue. What about budget? Obviously, it's really crucial to everyone right now. So how do you budget for mileage, refreshments for training, and even recognition for your volunteers? And could you give a roundabout of how much money is set aside within that budget, with your budget?
Well, here in Seattle, we've had a 48% cutback. So I don't know what the original budgeting was for classes, but what we do is we did some cutting back, and we're very careful about the handouts. We try to do online paperwork that the volunteer or the student can download themselves or read online instead of constantly handing out paperwork. And we also have our brochures online for them to read, as well as the training manual is also electronically produced. So we try to use those tools. We also have a brown bag lunch day, and we also have a eat out at a nursing home day. And those have basically cut back our budget almost in half. So it's helped us a little bit.
Thank you.
Here in New Hampshire, we created that 501c3 just for this purpose because we were not provided any funds whatsoever for the past 3 years. We couldn't even touch our budget for coffee for our volunteers. The creation of the 501c3, letting people know that they can make donations that are tax deductible to that, our yearly fundraiser, that offsets our volunteer recognition banquet. And because it's a 501c3, the board members take turns reaching out to like Panera Bread and Dunkin' Donuts to ask them for food and coffee donations for our volunteer meetings. That's made a huge difference for us.
This is Diane in Oregon, and in addition to that, our local recruitment and screening committee has obtained for about 4 years an Area Agency on Aging grant. So it's not huge, it's $1,300 a year, but it does allow us to place some ads in papers, small ads, and provides the cost of the food for our local volunteer recognition days. Then the state has a quickly shrinking budget on coffee and cookies for some of the support meetings, those monthly meetings. But I imagine, as in Washington, we're going to be seeing a big cut in that as well.
Great. Thank you. I'd like to go back to some of the other questions we've received online. Let's see. Kathy, are there regional staff members of your state program? So, you know, are they actually state employees, or are they contracted within local agencies?
They are subcontracted out within the Area Agencies on Aging.
Okay.
And then I also have, in addition to the full-time regional ombudsman through the Title VII funding, I subcontract out through the Area Agencies on Aging the Certified Volunteer Ombudsman Coordinator.
Great. Thank you. And Juanita, you may have already addressed this, and I may have missed it, but do all of your volunteers handle complaints? And an additional question, totally separate, is how is mileage paid for outreach? How do you, you know, do you have to justify mileage being paid for outreach rather than visits?
Currently, if they are in the position of being a volunteer or during training, currently now the way it is, if they're in training class or going to and from a complaint, they can record their mileage, and we pay 55 cents a mile. Now, over three-quarters of our volunteers don't ask for that money, but some of them do.
Okay. And, okay.
Oh, Amity, this is Diane Bishop again, and that
yes.
question reminded me that in Lane County, in our local area, that Area Agency on Aging grant also provides for mileage to and from facilities for any of our local ombudsmen who request it. Now, we don't have a lot. I think we just have two ombudsmen who use that service, but it's been a great way to retain them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good point. Thank you. And then one other question for Darlene. On the slide that you had in your PowerPoint about education, it said you had to complete specific competencies in order to be certified. So the person that asked this was wanting to know what those competencies were and how often you require your volunteers to visit their assigned facility.
Well, I'll answer the last one first. We ask our volunteers to visit their assigned facilities once a week for approximately 2 hours. If they're going to take a break, then we ask them to let us know. The competencies, now you're pressing my brain. they encompass things like identifying specific pieces of equipment that would be helpful in resolving concerns, identifying key areas within the facility that would also be identified within concerns, being able to start a conversation with an elder, being able to identify with an elder what the Office of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman is and what their role is, being able to resolve a concern. Those are just a few of them. And then within the competencies sheet, we ask the mentor to give us some feedback and recommend the volunteer for certification before they can move on and be certified. That way it's an extra person looking at the volunteer within the facility because we've noticed that some volunteers are very different in the classroom setting than they are in the nursing home or board and care home. Mm-hmm. So we let them know that they need to complete everything that's in that competency sheet, and I can get a copy of that to you, Amity, if you want to send it out.
That'd be great. Thank you.
And then I'm the Board of Appeal. If the mentor says that they don't recommend the person for certification, we also use that as in response to one of the earlier questions of decertification or counseling someone out. We let them know that they need to be recommended for certification as well.
Great. So we have time for perhaps one more question. So if anyone has a question out there in the audience, you can unmute your line using *7. Anyone?
I actually have a question.
Okay.
And this goes back to the interns that are coming from the universities and the law group. The question is, here in Washington, they have to go through training prior to even working as an ombudsman, and that has seemed to be a real stumbling block for us because they would rather not. And then we also ask them in King County here to agree to stay on for a year. And I was just wondering if the other regions do that as well. Do you have a year commitment?
Arkansas does.
New Hampshire does.
Okay, thank you.
Great question. Okay, everyone, this was an excellent webinar. Thank you so much to all of our presenters today. And I sincerely apologize for the initial technical issues that we experienced for the audio portion of the webinar. I really apologize, but I appreciate you joining us. What we're going to do for you after this webinar is send a couple emails. The initial one will be with a NORC tip sheet regarding volunteer program assessment and volunteer roles, as well as the bios and contact information for our presenters today. Once the additional resources are posted on our website, we will send you the link to that. We also invite you to share your innovative program ideas with us, with NORC, so we can share it with your colleagues. And also in the near future, we're excited to announce that we are going to launch discussion boards on the NORC website where you can communicate directly with your colleagues and NORC staff regarding volunteer program management. And we'll continue to share resources on our website. If you ever have an issue looking for something on our website and can't find it, please let us know and we can help you out with that. So again, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate your participation and we certainly appreciate what you do on behalf of residents every day. Take care, everyone.
Thank you, Anne.
Thank you. Please stand by.